I was absolutely amazed when I began to learn about faults and different kind of faults and what faults do and cracks in the earth and different types of intrusions that come in from under the earth that have magma and lava in them and different things about heat flash and the way they burn people when they come up out of the earth. So I learned a lot of things, and it was quite remarkable to me that having studied the Bible for years and gone through the seminary, I found a lot of the things the teachers were showing me over there gave an explanation for a lot of things God did in the Bible. So I guess about 1978 here in this church, I taught what I'm about to show you. I taught it, and at the time I taught it, I told you that I wish I could see what it was like underneath the earth over there. I found a bunch of hinge faults down in the southern part of Israel, down in what's known as the Negev wilderness. And when I found these hinge faults, I remembered something that had happened in the Old Testament, and I wondered if what had happened in the Old Testament occurred where these hinge faults were. So I went back and researched in the book of Genesis and Exodus, and sure enough, it had occurred right in the very area that these hinge faults were located. So once I realized that it had occurred in that area, I assumed that God used these hinge faults to do this particular thing I'm about to discuss. But I taught this in 1978, and at that time, all I knew they were hinge faults, and I didn't know what the ground looked like underneath. Well, I just got the latest issue of the 1996 General Science out of the Israeli Geology Department in Hebrew, from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and they've done an extensive survey down there, and it's pretty interesting. So I thought I'd share it with you, plus some other things that have helped me to understand some things the Bible talks about in Revelation. For those of you listening, I just had a little drink of coffee. Now, we're going to be talking about the... isn't it nice not to have to go all the way back here and turn that out? We're going to be talking about an area down here in southern Israel. Here is Jerusalem, of course, in the central part. There's the good old Dead Sea and the Jordan River, and up here's Dan. Here's Jerusalem, here's Beersheba, and here's Kadesh Barnea. Kadesh Barnea is where Moses was in the general vicinity when he sent the 12 spies northward. But he was also there in the wilderness of Paran when another event happened that we're going to be talking about in just a few moments. So I wanted you to get your perspective. Here's the Negev wilderness. Now the wilderness of Zin, Z-I-N, is up in here. The wilderness of Paran is down here. Moses was in the wilderness of Paran when he sent those 12 spies northward into Israel to spy out the land. But we're going to be talking about a little different event. Now, this comes from Hebrew University in Jerusalem, and it shows the same area. Down here is the Mitzbar Paran, the river Paran. Starts over here, north Paran. This area right here is where the wilderness of Paran begins, and the wilderness of Paran goes up into this area. This is all the wilderness of Paran. And up here is the Mikbar Zin. This is the river of Zin, and this was the wilderness of Zin. Here's your Negev wilderness. This is all the southern part of Israel. This is where the woman is going to flee during the tribulation period as the Antichrist drives her southward. But we're going to go back in the Old Testament and look at an event that occurred there. Now, remember that this part down here is the wilderness of Paran. This part up here is the wilderness of Zin. Here's the whole thing is called the Negev Wilderness. And this comes out of a book that I purchased when I was over in Israel years ago. Maktesh Ramon. Maktesh is overlook. This is Ramon, an overlook over a deep cavern. Paran Brook. The way heads south. On the way stands the gypsum quarry of Ramon, which supplies the cement factories of southern Israel. Beyond is the wide, dry bed of the Brook of Paran, which starts its course in the wilderness of Paran. Now, we're going to be talking about the wilderness of Paran, and notice what he has to say about Moses. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men, that they may spy out the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. And Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran. Now, on his deathbed, Moses mentioned Paran, Mount Paran. So, all I wanted to do with these charts was just familiarize us with the fact that this section down here, where the river Paran is, this is the wilderness of Paran. Up here is the wilderness of Zin. And the whole thing, all the way from Beersheba, which isn't on the chart, clean down to the end, is called the Negev Wilderness, and that's where the woman is going to flee. This came from Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And in Numbers 1 and Numbers 12, 16, and 13, 3. Numbers 12:16. And afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. So Hazeroth was right down here. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. These are the 12 that he sent northward. So we have here in Numbers 12:16 that he traveled from Hazeroth to Kadesh Barnea, actually into the wilderness of Paran. That's what it says. So we've got Moses fixed right in here in the 13th chapter of Numbers. And the nation of Israel stayed in this area, in the wilderness of Paran, for a long time. Now notice, immediately to the north of there, and I say this reverently, you've got one hellacious fault. You've got a terrifying fault that runs all the way across, and it's a dandy. I mean, it is a magnificent fault that runs across underneath this deep cavern here called Ramon. It's the Ramon Fault. Now, these are hinge faults, and hinge faults are the type that you see in spectacular movies during earthquakes where they open up and they swallow people. They're faults that open up and heat blasts come out of them, terrifying quick blasts of heat. I want you to notice, just for now, the Ramon Fault and the Paran Fault. Now, this is the wilderness of Paran here, and this is called the Paran Fault. Actually, they came up to Kadesh Barnea in the wilderness of Paran, and they were in this general area. So I want you to notice that Moses and the children of Israel have come up, and they're south of this fault structure. This is one terrifying fault structure, and I want you to notice that the nation of Israel is in the wilderness of Paran, and they are south of this fault structure. A little while later on, I think you'll see why that's important. Now, they moved around in that area where those faults were. They didn't just stay in one fixed place. So we're going to take a look at something a little while later on that I'll prepare you for before we get there. In Zechariah 14:2-3, the Lord is talking about when the Antichrist suddenly roars southward, the Assyrian. He roars southward into Israel from the north, out of Syria. He comes southward and he takes the city of Jerusalem. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue, a remnant of the people, shall not be cut off from the city. Now notice verse 3. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. One of the things I'm noted for, and one of the things that people associate me with more than anything else, I am convinced that God fights using the things he made. When God does something, he can either do it as an absolute irrefutable miracle, such as turning water into wine, which is a chemical impossibility, that he sets aside all of his laws and does it that way. But in many cases, God merely uses what he already has that he's made to perform his miraculous works, which only he can do. So we're going to talk about these faults, and we're eventually going to lead into something. But for right now, let's just look at Numbers 12:13. Let's look at verse 16. In Numbers 12:16, and afterward the people removed from Hazeroth and pitched in the wilderness of Paran. Now let's look at Numbers 13:3. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. They went up, and they searched out the land, and they brought back a very favorable report as far as the land itself was concerned, but because they were chicken and afraid of the giants and the Canaanites, they wouldn't go in and possess the land, and you all know what happened. Verse 25, Numbers 13:25, and they returned from searching of the land after 40 days. Verse 26, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and to all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. So you have Moses and the children of Israel right here in the vicinity of this Paran fault. Now we don't know exactly where Kadesh was. All we know, it was somewhere in this general area. Both of these are hinge faults. Kadesh Barnea could have been here, or it could have been here. It was somewhere in this general area. And it's very possible that in the migration of the area, since they did have large numbers of cattle, they didn't stay at one fixed location. They had large flocks of cattle, sheep, different types of animals, domestic animals, that they had to feed. So they probably went back and forth through this fault structure. You've got a fault going through here, the Arif Batur fault. So you've got three faults here, and you've got another one up to the north. Now, I want you to notice what happened while they were in this particular place in number 16. Now, you can go through and check the continuity all the way from numbers 13 to number 16, And you'll discover they stayed in the wilderness of Paran. What they did, they migrated back and forth, probably north, east, south, west, till they could find enough water and enough grazing for their for their domestic animals. So they were all in the vicinity of these faults. Number 1630. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up, with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. In 1978, I presented this and told you about Korah, who went against Moses. Korah wanted to take over the rulership, the leadership of the nation of Israel. God had appointed Moses. It greatly angered the Lord, and Korah was very insistent about it. He wanted to lead the nation of Israel. He accused Moses of being incompetent and tried to take over the leadership of the tribe. God was extremely irritated, and so God indicated through Moses he was going to perform a punishment on them that the whole nation of Israel would see. And here's what he did. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them. All of a sudden there was an earthquake. All of a sudden underneath Korah and his men, standing outside their tents, the ground just strictly opened up. That's one of the characteristics of this type of a particular fault. It does open up, and it does swallow people, and it does send out a heat blast. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. Now, don't misunderstand. If you had a solid rock strata with no faults in it, and God wanted to do this, God could do it. I don't question God's ability. But I think God very conveniently had them in that place, and I think God had made these faults a long time before, and I think he used his own creation to fulfill his own desires upon these people. It didn't just open her mouth and swallow them up. It did something else. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. That's one of the things about hinge faults. They'll open up, they'll swallow things, and they'll close back up. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us off also. Now notice this. And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. This is a heat flash. This is something that happens when the earth suddenly opens, and the heat that's in a magmatic chamber, a baccalith or a laccalith, suddenly exits and comes up and hits the people that are standing in the immediate vicinity of it. They usually go straight up and then spread out quickly, and they don't go too far. This isn't like the one that's going to be in the Jordan Valley. This one comes straight up, goes out a short distance, and consumes anyone within that short distance. Now, it's interesting that in that particular area, you had all these faults. I don't think that they were there by accident. Now, we know that they went from Hazareth to the wilderness of Paran. Way up here, it's where the wilderness of Zin exists. All of this section here was still the wilderness of Paran. Now, they were all through this area. Now, you don't have any faults up here. You don't have any faults down here. They're all right in here. And I'm convinced that what happened was this. These men were standing on top of one of these faults. God had told Moses what he was going to do. And the earth opened her mouth. God opened it up, swallowed them. Whammo! Up came a heat flash from underneath. Now that heat flash is something I just subjectively believe. But to be honest with you, now the evidence has come in and it's there. See, I didn't have this. This was from 1996. It goes with this chart. This is the Ramon Fault that goes across here. Now we're going to take a cross section across it like this. In other words, up here's north, down here's south. North is straight up this way, south is straight down this way. So this is north, this is south. Over here on this diagram, this is north. This is the portion right up here, north. This is the section south, down here. Now, what happened, apparently, was this. This black area that you see here is basaltic intrusion. This is where the liquid magma came up. This is volcanic material, this red-hot flowing liquid rock came up. This is called a laccolith. This thing here is called a batholith. This is called a volcanic spike or dike. And what happens on these things, whenever you get an opening in the earth, sudden heat flashes come off the batholith. Now I want you to notice this Ramon Fault went straight down into the batholith. If this is the one God used and they opened up, you would have had a tremendous heat flash. But it may have been back here. He may have opened the earth over an old dike that came up like this. This was liquid, red hot flowing liquid rock called magma. These are the rock strata. And it would have come up, released a heat flash, burned the 250 men, killed them, dead as a doornail. And it would have also had the earth cleave asunder. They would have fallen down into the dike, and then the heat would have come up out of it. So now in 1996, the things that I taught back there that I didn't have substantiation of, because I didn't have these stratigraphy charts underneath, but now I do, because they have techniques now where they can determine by waves that travel through the earth, they can actually photograph it. It's called seismic tomography. Now, I showed you this for a reason. You know, in the lecture series that I do, I've repeatedly talked about the Antichrist and how he is going to drive Israel southward. I want to talk some more about it. When I first started presenting this, I thought that probably the Antichrist would drive no further south than Beersheba. I've changed my mind. I think the Antichrist will drive clean down into this fault area. And I think that Israel will be in serious trouble. Now, most of their military fortifications, well, they're pretty well even throughout there. But they've got an awful lot down here in the wilderness of Paran. Down here in this general area, they've got quite a bit. Because they've always felt very safe down here. This is where they have some of their airfields. Up here, they've got quite a bit. But they've got a very heavy concentration here that they brought across out of the Sinai. And we watched them build it, bring it across after the 1967 war. We watched a lot of activity in that area. Now, I'm convinced that the Antichrist will drive the Israelites clean down into here. He'll get his army right here on this fault structure. He'll be driving south, and I think what he's going to do to the Antichrist army is virtually the same thing he did to Korah and his men, because he still controls that same area. Now, you know in the lecture series that I present that I go through and talk about children of Israel and make a case to prove that they are the woman in the 12th chapter of Revelation. God seals them physically in the middle of the tribulation period. This is a sealing that occurs in the middle of the tribulation period. It is not a spiritual sealing, because God directs these four angels not to hurt the earth, the sea, or the trees. All three of those are literal, physical, material entities. When he gets down here and he seals the servants of our God in their foreheads, they're literal, material, physical entities. It is not a spiritual sealing. Now, at the end of the tribulation period, they will receive the Messiah when he returns. But this is a sealing that assures that 144,000 of all the tribes, the children of Israel, will come through the tribulation period and will not suffer death. Now, that woman is very clearly outlined in the 12th chapter of Revelation. And for those of you that have seen me do the lectures on Sunday morning or whatever, you know what I believe about these particular scriptures. Now, in Zechariah 14, 2 and 3, "For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue, a remnant of the people, shall not be cut off from the city." Now, when the Antichrist, the Assyrian, sometimes called the Prince of the North, sometimes called Gog, sometimes called the Man of Sin, sometimes called that Wicked One, he has many different names, but they all wrote about the same man. When this Antichrist overruns the city of Jerusalem, then God's going to go forth and fight. He's going to go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle, and he's going to fight in the same way he's fought in the past. He's done this in Exodus. He's done this all the way down through the Bible. Every time God gets ready to do something to destroy an advancing army, 9 times out of 10, he takes the earth or the natural phenomena that occur in our atmosphere, and he uses that to destroy the enemies of Israel. I think he's going to do the same thing this time. Now, right here in the middle of the tribulation period, we have the woman fleeing into the wilderness. This is the mid-trib portion. The Antichrist has signed a false peace treaty. All of a sudden, here he breaks it. And the woman fled in the wilderness, where she had the place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days, 1,260 days, times half a time, 3.5 years, 42 months, the last 3.5 years, the tribulation period. You know what I've taught about this. You've heard it over and over and over again, so I won't bore you with that. This is in the very middle of the tribulation period. At the same time, in the middle of the tribulation period, a spiritual war breaks out in heaven. There was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And when the dragon saw that he was cast under the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. She was born of an Israeli woman. And the woman in the 12th chapter can be no one other than the nation of Israel itself. I make case to prove that in the lecture series, and it's quite conclusive. Verse 14. You know exactly what I've taught about this. I've taught about the massive airlift after Israel is split into two sections, the northern section running from Tel Aviv up to Haifa, the southern section in the Negev wilderness. So I've covered verse 14. You've heard it so many times, you could probably do it better than I could. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly in the wilderness into her place where she is nourished for a time, 1 year, times 2 years, half a year, half a time, a half year, one plus two plus a half is 3 years from the face of the serpent. That wilderness is the Negev wilderness. There's absolutely no question about it. It's the Negev wilderness into which she flees. Now, why do I believe that the Antichrist army is going to penetrate down into that fault zone? Why am I so convinced of it? Well, here you've got in Revelation 6 and 12. And I beheld when it opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. That's mid-trib. When I held a mid-trib position for many years, between the fifth and sixth seal, that's when I taught that the actual rapture or first resurrection of the saints would occur. And I taught it would occur at that particular point in time. You had the saints in heaven on the fifth seal. You had them crying out for their glorified bodies, wanting God to wreak vengeance on the earth because of their having been martyred for the cause of Christ. And he told them to wait for a little season. Now, that's the middle of the tribulation period on the sixth seal. I'm certain of it. So in Revelation 6:12, and I beheld when he had opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake. That is the very first earthquake in the book of Revelation. You will not find one before it. There's a tremendous earthquake, and I believe that earthquake is in Israel. That starts a whole series of earthquakes that go all the way through the seventh seal, the seven trumpets, and the seven vials of wrath. Now we come down to something that's also happening in the middle of the tribulation period. The Antichrist overruns Jerusalem in the middle of the tribulation period. He drives Israel southward into the Negev wilderness. Now, I want you to notice why I believe he'll drive them a little further south than I thought. Here are where these hinge faults are. These are very dangerous, deadly faults. We don't have any concentration of faults like that in that particular manner anywhere in the Mideast. That's the most deadly concentration and closeness of east-west faults I know of anywhere in the Mideast. You've got the Sa'id Naqfa fault. You've got the Ramon fault, the Arif Fatur fault. You've got the Paran fault. The Antichrist apparently drives all the way down just north of Kadesh Barnea. I believe the Antichrist army will be concentrated right in here. Israel will have retreated to the very place where she failed to go in and possess the land. And I think God's going to put her right back where she was before she possessed the land. And I think it's a kind of an indication of a historical event that marked the time when Israel wouldn't do what God said. Well, now, thousands of years later, he's got her back in the same box. But this time, God delivers her. When the Antichrist gets in this area, God's going to tear him to smithereens. He's going to rip him to shreds, and he's going to use these faults to do it. Now, this is not the time when he destroys one-sixth of the Antichrist army. This is the time before that. This is a time when great catastrophes occur to the Antichrist army. It is not when five-sixths of the army is destroyed. That occurs about 3.5 years later when God rips this open. But this stops the Antichrist penetration down into the Negev, and God saves Israel from more or less annihilation by stopping it herself. Now, I want us to take a look at this particular area. We're going to take a look at the Ramon Fault. We're going to look north of it, and we're going to look south of it. And we're going to take a vertical cross-section of it to see what it looks like in between. Here's the yellow area. Here's a blow-up of it. This is the yellow area. You've got all kinds of structural weaknesses like you would not believe. This is the fault. This is the red line. Now, this is north. Remember, north is up here where the Antichrist army is located. The Antichrist army is north of this fault. Down here to the south is where Israel is located. Now, I want you to notice something. Here you've got sedimentary layers on top of quartz. Down here, you've got a batholith. Now, what's interesting about this is, and you've heard me teach this many times, any time that you have an old batholith and it's solidified, that is the most stable type of strata you can have. And when you've got one of these underneath the earth, it's solid basaltic rock hardened. And earthquake activity is absorbed by that and hardly felt at the surface at all. This is an old dried up batholith. These were original pikes and dikes that came up, and they're also solidified. You remember I showed you over there on the diversion of the Euphrates River years ago on the actual tapes that we issued. Those faults that came through across what was up in the northern part where I showed you the Euphrates would be diverted. I showed you on either side a heavy basaltic shield underneath. This is a heavy basaltic shield. It's extremely stable. The Antichrist army is going to be over here. Man, this is six different shades of unstable. That's quartzite underneath there. These are sedimentary layers on top, and they're very unstable. The earthquake is going to occur in this zone to the north of the fault. And you're going to have this thing shaking like a bowl full of jelly. You talk about devastation. You talk about cracks opening in the earth. And you talk about the mighty shaking of an army. North of this fault line, in this particular area, you're going to have it like you wouldn't believe. In September, I'm going down and survey that area, Lord willing, and get some good pictures of it. This is what I think it talks about. Revelation 12:15. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away of the flood. At one time, I thought that particular flood was literal water. But it's as a flood. And after having studied the Bible some more, I've changed my mind. And the reason I've changed my mind is because of this. In Isaiah 8:7, now, this prophecy was fulfilled a long time ago. A long time ago, Tiglath-Pileser came across out of Assyria in the north and overran the northern part of Israel. He was followed by Shalmaneser, and he drove a little further south. Then Sargon the Magnificent took the capital of Samaria. And then he was succeeded by Sennacherib, who drove all the way down into Judah and would have conquered Judah had not King Hezekiah pleaded to God and God delivered them. This has already been fulfilled, but the imagery that is given here is of an army, a massive army of men. And it was very common in Old Testament literature to refer to an advancing army as a great flood or a great thunderstorm or a great cloud. So in Isaiah 8:7, now therefore, behold, the Lord bringeth upon them the waters of the river. Now that's referring to the Euphrates River. But what he's doing is talking about where the Euphrates comes from. Strong and mighty, many. That's where Assyria was located. Even the king of Assyria, he says, I'm not talking about the Euphrates, I'm talking about the king of Assyria. In all his glory, and he shall come up over all his channels and over all his banks. He pictures the king of Assyria and his army as a great river, waters coming south. And he has the king of Assyria bulging out over the side of the banks, the channels, over the banks, and overrunning. And he shall pass through Judah like a flood going through. And he shall overflow and go over like a floodplain is overrun by water. He shall reach even to the neck. It pictures the king of Assyria like a flood coming up to the neck of all the people. And the stretching out of his wings, it pictures the actual water spreading across the land, shall fill the breadth of thy land, O Emmanuel. So this imagery of a huge army coming south as a flood is what I think is meant here in the book of Revelation when he talks about the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. I think when the Antichrist gets down in this particular area and he gets his troops all down here along this particular zone north of that fault, I think God's going to cut loose, and I think the earth is going to open. And I think a large part of the Antichrist army is going to feel the full effects of it. This is not when 5/6 of his army is destroyed. That's about 3.5 years later. Revelation 6:12. And I beheld when he'd opened the sixth seal, and lo, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood. This is in the general time vicinity of the middle of the tribulation period. This is when the Antichrist attacks the city of Jerusalem. This is when the Antichrist then drives the nation of Israel southward into the Negev wilderness. I'm convinced that great earthquake is going to occur there in the Negev wilderness. The Antichrist army is going to be severely battered and damaged by the power of God, and forever the people of Israel are going to remember it. Now, the Bible indicates, the Word indicates, that after this happens, and the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. He apparently turns from attacking the woman. This stops him. It's after this and what happens to him that he goes across and attacks Egypt. That's in Daniel chapter 11, verses 40 through 44. And so this is, I think, what happens to the Antichrist army. I think it's an act of Almighty God. I think that the earth is going to open up, so severely damage the Antichrist army, that it will be something from the Lord. I think the nation of Israel will rally around this. I wouldn't be at all surprised if the nation of Israel wasn't able to drive back into that area, perhaps take it back as far as Beersheba. But the Bible doesn't say that. It does say later on, at the end of the tribulation period, Israel is going to drive all the way to Hamath and all the way to the Euphrates. But the dragon at this time goes ahead and begins to make war elsewhere. And quite frankly, at this particular period in time, he's got about a little over 3 years where he's going to continue to cause havoc on this earth. And at the end of that time, God's going to produce an earthquake in the Jordan River Valley and destroy 5/6 of his army when he comes to make the final attack at the Battle of Armageddon. This is not Armageddon. This is when he first attacks Israel. I think all these tie together. And God, who made the earth, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, owns, operates, and controls the earth, is the one who predicted these things would happen, and it was by his spirit these things were written. I don't think those faults are there by accident. I think they're there for a purpose. And I think when the earth opens her mouth, it's going to swallow up the flood of his army. It's going to cause the Antichrist to have second thoughts about anything else, because he's going to recognize it's from their God. That's when he goes across into Egypt. He's got them bottled up in the Negev. He's, for all practical purposes, he's got what he wants. And so that's the end of that. And I'm saving a little time on the end. So Johnny said we had some kind of a real special song that we were going to practice on. And yeah, you can cut it off. And